We are so grateful to all of you who teach. We love you. We appreciate you more than we can say. We have great confidence in you. To teach effectively and to feel you are succeeding is demanding work indeed, but it is worth it. We can receive no greater call.
Welcome to Teaching No Greater Call. As a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, you have the opportunity to teach the gospel. As a parent, son, daughter, sister, brother, or neighbor, you have the opportunity to teach.
Welcome to Teaching No Greater Call on the Mormon Channel, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm your host, Brother David M. McConkie, First Counselor in the Sunday School General Presidency. This is part two of the episode, Teaching the Doctrine. With me today is Michael M. McConkie, a lifelong seminary teacher, and Tina M. Peterson, co-author of the book, Understanding Isaiah. This is particularly meaningful for me today to be here because Michael and I are brothers. And so as I thought about teachers who've made such a difference in my life, I immediately thought about him and also Sister Peterson, who is a wonderful teacher in our stake. Well, we've talked today in our first episode about teaching the doctrine and the importance of teaching the doctrine. Now I'd like to take a few minutes as we expand on that topic, and let me ask one question as we begin. How do we make sure that we're keeping the doctrine pure? How do we make sure that we don't deviate from those things that should be taught and that the Lord would have us teach?
One of the principles taught by Elder Eyring is that as we purify, or not purify, as we simplify the doctrine, if we can keep it as simple as possible, there's great safety in that. So as you teach a doctrinal principle that Heavenly Father is our Father, and He loves us, and we are His children, but we don't go too far afield in that. There's just some real safety in purity and simplicity.
Sister Peterson?
I like to turn to the Scriptures. I like to be able to say that even if I'm not quoting the Scripture directly because I'm expressing something from my own heart and from my own experience, I like to be able to say, Alma said this in the 5th chapter and the 13th verse. I stick to the Scriptures as much as possible. And where I know that the Scriptures are backed up by the words from modern prophets, I can feel assured that where I'm walking is pure doctrine.
You know, another part that helped me in my gospel learning was a grand old teacher, Robert Matthews. Robert Matthews used to teach a gospel principle, and he'd read it in the most beautiful, pure form. And so he'd say, Brigham Young taught this. And later this same doctrine was taught by John Taylor here, and later by Spencer W. Kimball here, and now by Thomas S. Monson here. When you hear that kind of line, that genealogy of that doctrine, you can rest assured that there is no confusion or we haven't found an obscure quote. So he's given that background. That's a wonderful way to teach. So to use a beautiful statement by an ancient prophet, ancient meaning Brigham Young, maybe Brigham Young wouldn't like to think of himself that way, but to also have that other witness of living prophets, then you know you're in safe ground.
Okay. Sister Peterson?
When I was young and I was attending seminary, I had kind of a life-changing experience. My seminary teacher was a brilliant man. He knew the Scriptures backwards and forwards, and he could quote them off the top of his head. And I had a great enthusiasm and a desire to learn more, and so I went to some books by an author who was considered a scholar in the church at the time and was very popular and read some material there. It was an Old Testament year, and I read some material concerning the book of Genesis, I think it was. And I went with that the next seminary class. And as the teacher was talking about that material, I quoted this individual. And my teacher said, no, that's not correct. Here's what the Scriptures say. And I was profoundly shocked that a book could be printed. I was young and naive, that a book could be printed and not be correct. And I thought, I am never going to read another book in my entire life until I know the scriptures backwards and forwards and the comments from the general authorities out of the conference addresses backwards and forwards to such an extent that I will know any time opinion is being offered in any other outside material rather than doctrine. And I have to say that it was after I graduated college that I ever dared to open a book that was a commentary on scripture before I actually felt prepared, thoroughly prepared to know without a shadow of a doubt if I was dealing with somebody else's opinion.
Well, that's interesting. So if we want to avoid deviating from pure doctrine, deviating from the truth, then you've indicated, Brother McConkie, to keep it simple. There's no reason to go into deep, deep issues, but to keep it simple. And that's probably pretty comforting for a new member of the church that's teaching, because they don't have to delve deeply into doctrine. It's more important just to keep it simple. And then, Sister Peterson, to understand that we need to read the scriptures, and that's where we will understand and learn the doctrine in the scriptures. Now, what is the role of the Spirit in all of this, then?
That's a big question.
Well, let me go ahead. Well, let me phrase it this way. Elder McConkie, Bruce R. McConkie, said on one occasion, as quoted by his son, Joseph McConkie, he said, "I learned the gospel by paying attention to what I said when I taught." I learned the gospel by paying attention to what I said when I taught. What does that mean, Brother McConkie?
That means that learning is constantly going on, and if a person is humble enough to yield himself totally to the teachings of the Spirit, that there's going to be a wonderful experience that happens for both the teacher and for the student. And oftentimes, as I've taught, sometimes I learn by what I'm speaking at the time. I've had that experience before, and it's been wonderful, and I come home, and I'm so excited, and I tell Gina, and she says, "Well, you should have known that your whole life." But it's been a wonderful experience. And then sometimes I learn as students begin to reflect back on what's happening with them. I had a young man once who was handicapped, mentally handicapped, and struggled. And I taught a lesson on the resurrection. And it was a simple, straightforward lesson. And at the end of class, he raised his hand and he said this. He said, "I am so grateful for the principle of the resurrection. The reason I'm so grateful is I know I've got a broken body, and when I get resurrected, this body's going to be fixed." And I thought that was a profound statement, but then he stopped, and he said this: "We all have broken bodies, and when the resurrection comes, we're all going to be made better and fixed." And for some reason, in all my learning, I hadn't considered myself broken. I hadn't understood that doctrine. And even today, years after he made that statement in class, it's been one of the most profound learning experiences that I've had in my life. And I thought it was interesting that the Lord would speak through a child with autism to teach me such a marvelous principle.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us. That's a meaningful principle, a meaningful example. Sister Peterson, do you have anything that you'd like to add to that principle?
I think some of my most joyful experiences are those occasions when the flow of the class gets interrupted for a question that somebody, a really honest and sincere question that somebody has to ask, and it wasn't a part of my planning and my preparation that week. And because I have loved the scriptures so much, I'm able to sit back for just a second, open my mind and my heart to the Spirit, and the answer just flows. It just comes. And I know, and I can absolutely testify with assurance that the Spirit can provide. You open your mouth and the Spirit can and does provide the answer. And sometimes that answer that comes is one that I didn't even know that I knew. Sometimes it's quoting a scripture that I knew and just it was buried back in there in my mind somewhere, because as we all get old, we forget things. But sometimes it connected in a way that I had never even considered before. I was able to connect the dots between scriptures in a way that I had never even considered before. And I have found such beauty and profound teaching in some of those moments for my own self that sometimes I actually get caught stopping in the middle of the class and thinking, wow, before I'm able to pick up again and move on. It's a wonderful experience.
You know, and it's kind of amazing that as you're talking, you start to stand amazed and say, "I didn't know that." And you really do. You start to learn from the Spirit that kind of just flows. And those are moments that are so rewarding in teaching. It kind of just charges your battery. You're all ready
Absolutely.
To go.
Absolutely, they
you know,
do.
After getting beat down and having someone set someone on fire and all the other experiences that you can have, probably maybe not that literally, but it's just so wonderful that the Lord kind of teaches us as we teach.
Well, isn't that a wonderful principle, that the Lord can actually teach the teacher while they're teaching? Because that really means the teacher's a student too, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
That we're all students in there. Now, I suppose there's some things that some teachers do that would get in the way of that. Can you think of anything that a teacher could do to maybe get in the way of having the Spirit teach?
Believing that they have to follow a script. Believing that the lesson that they have outlined needs to be read exactly the way that it is laid out on paper, or that they have prepared it, that they are stuck with this, and that if they stick with that, they're safe. You've got to be able to move with where the Spirit takes you. You've got to be able to feel the Spirit while teaching and allow it to flow through you, and allow your own education process to continue through that.
That's a pretty scary concept, isn't it, for some teachers to not have the script in front of them, everything that they're going to teach?
It is scary.
How do you get to that point in teaching? How do we get there as a young teacher, or even as an older teacher? How do we get to the point where we're not so tied to our script and to our notes and to all of our preparations?
I think you have to be confident in your ability to be able to feel the Spirit, and that comes with growth and development. That comes with experience. The church is a wonderful place to obtain that experience, because we are all teachers in one form or another, in one place or another. We are always teaching. That is a fundamental calling in the church, whether as a parent or as a teacher or someone in an administrative capacity like a bishop or a general authority. We are always teachers. And with that experience, we get a little bit more familiar with how the Spirit works with us, and we're willing to hand over the reins just a little bit more. You don't have to give up on having an outline. Even the general authorities prepare their talks beforehand. You don't have to give up on having that outline. You just have to be willing to walk away from it when you're prompted to.
Okay. Anything you'd like to add to that, Brother McConkie?
I think the ability to love your class and know that they want you to succeed, even if you're not succeeding in your own mind at the moment, and the ability to pull back enough to really listen to the questions. Sometimes we're so focused on the material we want to present that we're not really listening to their questions, and we're just kind of pushing past it, or we're giving this road to answer to it. I've always thought that students love a teacher who will really listen and then seriously consider the question, and even if they don't agree, they allow that respect to allow someone to hold that opinion and view that, and then teach the true doctrine the simplest and purest way you can, and then let the Spirit do the work. And so if you can relax enough, teaching should be fun. I mean, you should sit up there, and sometimes they'll say the darndest stuff, and it just kind of cracks you up, and off you go, and then you get back on track, and you go. But it should be fun, and it should be a time of mutual respect between the students and the teacher, and a time to allow the Spirit to work. And sometimes you don't know the answer. And you say, you know, that's a great question. Would you come back next week and give me the answer to that? And then you send the student off, and they have to do a little research and a little bit of study and go home and talk to their parents and come back. And parents are going to love you. Their kid comes home and asks a gospel question. They'll go, oh, my goodness, this is awesome. And so sometimes not all the pressure should be on the teacher. You've got students there. They're bright. They've got the scriptures. They've got references. They've got parents. They've got people that are pulling for them to succeed. And sometimes they'll simply know the answer. Or sometimes you just say, I don't know.
So you're suggesting that it's not a sign of weakness or lack of preparation for a teacher to say, I don't know the answer to that.
Absolutely not. If you're teaching young kids, you can't always open up to the class and say, does anybody have an answer to that? But when you're teaching the adults, especially in gospel doctrine or in priesthood or relief society, your entire class has had experience in teaching. And you ought to be able to rely upon them in moments where you feel inadequate to be able to say, does anybody here have the answer to that?
Mm-hmm. You know, and even with a young class, sometimes they're pretty profound, and they can give you an answer that maybe not the textbook answer, but the answer is there. It's simplified, and you've got to adjust your mind down and say, you know, that's right. That's really true. So sometimes we overthink it. We overwork it. It's like overworking cement or overworking a pot or something. It ruins the final product if you just keep overworking it and overworking it. And sometimes we need to back off and just enjoy.
And so, again, the concept, the principle is just to keep it simple, isn't it? To keep it simple and then I guess to have enough courage that when you have that subtle feeling that you ought to go and say this or go this direction, that you have to just take that leap, don't you? Just take that step into the darkness and say, I'm going to leave my prepared material and I'm going to step in this direction that I don't know where it's leading for sure. Would that be an accurate observation, Sister Peterson?
It would be an accurate observation. I do try to make sure that wherever I feel prompted to step out into that darkness of unprepared material, that I am still in line and in harmony with what I know to be specifically, know to be from the Scriptures. And I try to make sure that we don't get into any speculation or some of the hardest questions to deal with in a class are the what-if questions. The questions when you're talking about resurrection where somebody says, well, what if my aunt so-and-so did this in life? Is she going to be able to be resurrected into the celestial kingdom? Or is she going to receive her inheritance in a kingdom of glory? Or where will she be? You can't answer the what-if questions. And you have to be willing to say, we can't answer the what-if questions, but here's the doctrine. I found that one really good, simple formula for me has worked, and that is that if I ever, ever have to say, preface a statement with the words, I think, that I need to not say that statement.
And that's hard.
It is a hard thing to say. But if I have to say, I think this is what the Lord would say, or I think this is how the Lord would judge your Aunt Judy, I have got to not say that. If I have to say, I think, then I need to be instead saying, I'm not sure. I need to go find that answer out. Or would you look that answer up for us and bring that back to class? Never should we be saying, I think this is what the Lord would say.
You know, it took me a long time and a lot of years to figure out that when a young student, asks a question, they very seldom ask a broad philosophic question that they want to know the answer to in a broad philosophic sense. They're always thinking in their mind, this is Aunt Judy or Uncle John or someone. They're thinking very specific. And so when a teacher teaches, they have to do exactly what Tina mentioned. You have to teach a broad, simple, pure doctrine and then let the Spirit distill how it works in that instance. And so I always tell students, well, I can answer that in a broad, doctrinal, simple way, but I can't give the specific tie to that situation because I just don't know and I'm not the judge and God's going to have to do that. But it's amazing how they have very specific things in mind, even though they don't express it. They're not expressing it, but it's there. And so if you start answering specifically, you're going to do some hurt, I think.
Okay. So the Spirit ultimately has to teach those principles to all of us, isn't it? And that would be the principle we're trying to talk about here.
That's true.
Absolutely. And the best way for the Spirit to do that is directly through the doctrine, not through supposition.
Well, let's talk for a moment about some substitutes for, I would say, substitutes for the Spirit. What are teachers sometimes tempted to do to create some kind of a substitute feeling in the class or substitute reactions? Does that make sense, that question?
No, it makes sense. I think it's difficult to sometimes separate emotional stories or emotional things and spiritual things. And I think as you're younger, it's more difficult maybe. Is that true?
I think as you're younger, it's more difficult to discern the difference between the two.
Between the two.
But I think out of habit, especially among women, I think it happens a little bit more that we have a tendency to choose to dwell on topics that are close to our heart, whether those are our children or our family, the things that are happening within that home front environment that is so close to our heart. And sometimes those things bring us to tears, and sometimes we interpret those tears as the Spirit, when maybe it's not always the Spirit, and maybe it's not coming from true doctrine or is even a truth that's being taught, but is something that strikes our fancy because it's something that we hope is true. One of the things that in my own life has impacted me, we lost a baby during a pregnancy at about 19 weeks. And I looked for a very long time after that for any commentary made by general authorities as to where or what happens. Will I see that child? Is that child mine? That kind of a very emotionally charged situation is something that women in general can find themselves dwelling on and straying away from the doctrine on, especially into an environment where we just don't know what the doctrine is. And it was hard for me to say, I don't know. I don't know, and to be able to leave it there, I don't know, on a doctrinal sense. I feel feelings in my heart, but I don't know. And the feelings that I feel in my heart, those are the emotions. And the doctrine and the spirit and the comfort that came to me from my prayers to the Lord, that comfort was the spirit, but that spirit didn't tell me. It didn't tell me what was going to happen with that child. It just comforted me.
Well, let's just talk for a minute about one other principle. I'd like to have you each consider this question. Is there a difference between being an independent witness as a teacher or being just an echo?
I think an echo is where maybe you would look up and you give a lot of statements of the brethren, which are true and which is valuable. An independent witness is where I've experienced that. I know it's true of myself. The Spirit has witnessed to me.
I was going to say it's mainly your testimony. I think that as I teach and as we teach or address a specific principle, sometimes my testimony may come out in just the simple words of, I know this to be true because I've experienced this myself. And sometimes it may come out in the form of a short story in my own life of how that has applied in my life and how I have seen that to be true. I think as we talk about doctrine, it is applicable to use stories from your own life or from your own experience that also bear witness and testimony to the truthfulness of that doctrine and how it has applied in your life.
And President Monson does that masterfully, don't you think?
Yes,
I mean,
he
does that, and it has a point, and it goes there, and they're true. And so that's a great thing. It's also a wonderful opportunity for a teacher to sit back and just kind of bask in the spirit and allow students to testify of a principle. They come from such varied backgrounds, and they have such personal experiences. And to have a young man stand up and say, you know, I really know that's true because I've had this experience, you can see the impact the Spirit's having on other students.
So how do you draw that out of a young man or a young woman in a class?
Well, one, you have to have a class that has the Spirit. So you have to set the setting the best you can. It takes both the teacher and the student to want to have that experience, and it takes trust. People aren't going to tell things that are real close to their hearts if that spirit's not in the class. And so the hardest job of a teacher, I think, is getting things set. And so we have a prayer, and we'll sing a hymn, and we'll be in the scriptures, and all those things, rather than quoting from other sources a lot or from something else, because those are wonderful things. But if they're just little teeny things compared to the power of the Word, compared to the power of prayer, compared to the power of the Spirit, compared to all those things that a teacher can help bring in the class. I found when I fail as a teacher, occasionally something's going on in the class that's outside my control, but usually I've just not done it very well. You know, I've come in a little too jovial, and that's my nature and personality, and I haven't set the setting well enough that we can get into that sense of trust and sharing and the spirit that you'd really like.
And so it's one thing to just quote others, even though the statements may be true, and just echo what others have said. But how does a teacher become an independent witness? How is a teacher able to do more than just be an echo of others' feelings or statements? How does that teacher himself or herself actually become an independent witness of the things that they're teaching?
I think we talked about that a little bit ago. You have to live it. And sometimes, for some of those principles, living it fully will be a lifelong experience, a lifelong process. And you may not, until you reach a great age, have experienced what really enduring to the end may mean, for example, and how to endure to the end well. There are parts of the experience of life that teach us that. But as we approach those experiences in life, if we do them obediently with all of our heart, might, mind, and strength focused in our love for the Lord and our eyes single to His glory, then we learn. We learn and we obtain a testimony that can't be refuted, that can't be changed.
So that witness comes from the Spirit. Would that be your observation then, Sister Peterson?
That witness does come from the Spirit, but it also comes through the trials of life.
Okay. Brother McConkie?
You know, I remember Elder McConkie's final testimony in which he says, kind of paraphrasing, but he says that you may feel that these are the words of others or of other prophets, but they're not. They're mine, for God has given them to me, and I stand as an independent witness. When that statement was made, it just burned into my heart. Now, I can't speak for others, but for me, it burned into my heart. Now, here's a man that's testifying like Isaiah. He's using the words of Nephi, but they're not the words of Nephi anymore. They become his words. And so as we study, as we have experiences, as we have trials, the scriptures aren't just what's written on the page. They literally infuse into our souls. And so as we speak and as we think, we're thinking the words of Nephi. We're thinking the words of Alma. We're thinking the words of Enoch. And they just become our words. And sometimes you listen to older people or people who are speaking in the church, and they're speaking the words of the prophets, but they don't credit the prophets. They're just speaking the words of the prophets, and they become theirs. They've taken ownership of them through obedience and through sacrifice and through the power of the Spirit.
I think Moses referred to it as having the word of God written on the fleshy tablets of the heart.
Is it possible for even the newest teacher in the church to have that experience, to have that personal testimony of the things they're teaching so they can bear that testimony to the class?
I think absolutely. And in fact, if I were a teacher and I knew I had a new convert in the class, I'd be thrilled. Because here you've got someone who's lived that and can testify and share their experiences, and they can see that contrast. Sometimes we've been in the church so long, we've kind of forgotten a little bit, and we're just kind of used to these things happening. But there are so many new converts in the church that could be such a powerful tool and instrument in a teacher's class and lesson in having that witness to bear their testimony on what they know. And there's something about it, hearing it in a British accent. There's something about it, hearing it in a Filipino accent. There's something about it that the Spirit just says, This is big. This is much bigger than you, and this is true.
Thank you. Well, we're talking today again about teaching pure doctrine, teaching from the Scriptures and not straying from the Scriptures when we teach. And we've talked a little bit about the power that comes from that, the life-changing power that can come from teaching doctrine. Do you have any final closing thoughts that you'd like to add to this concept, Sister Peterson and then Brother McConkie?
You know, the only closing thought that I have is what I always close with, and that's my testimony, that the words that are in the Scriptures, and particularly in the Book of Mormon, have great, great power, not only to bring the Spirit into the room, but to change people's lives, to influence their perspective to a more godly perspective. I know this from personal experience, and I know that from the many people that I have seen as I have worked with them in the Scriptures. And I know that sometimes when the Scriptures seem most challenging to understand, most difficult to teach, because we're not quite sure what it is that we're pulling out of the doctrine, I know that if you go to the Lord in prayer, He can help you to understand what it is that you're supposed to be teaching and where the truth lies in something that might be a little bit confusing to you. That's my testimony.
Brother McConkie?
You know, it's amazing to me how marvelous these Scriptures are. I'm a little older, so I remember when we had the older Scriptures with the footnotes and the things that were going on there, and now we've got them all together. And you can just look at the footnotes at the bottom of the page, and you can be in the Book of Mormon, and the next second you're in the Old Testament, and then you're in the Doctrine and Covenants, then you're in the Pearl of Great Price, and then you're in the Topical Guide, and then you're in the Bible Dictionary. And what a marvelous tool just a set of Scriptures are. Even if you're a brand-new convert to the church, and you look through those study guides, and you go through, and in my Scriptures, I'll say to myself, this is my pride coming in. This would be a better footnote. And so I find myself putting my own footnotes in and putting those things in, and it's just a marvelous tool. There is truly great power in the Scriptures, and the blessings and the miraculousness of those Scriptures and how they've been put together, and the footnotes and the study guides and the help. Truly, we should have the greatest gospel scholars that have ever lived coming out of this generation. They're bright, and they've got such marvelous tools, And what a great blessing that is. So I'm very, very grateful for the expense and the sacrifice of so many individuals and the work the church has done in publishing these new scriptures.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Teaching No Greater Call, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on the Mormon Channel.